Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
All right, Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and we've got quite a crowd here this morning.
We do. We have a full studio, and we have a full day, a long day, because we have this show, then we have time for a nap, but later tonight we're going to be out at the aquarium.
That's right. The Women in Technology, WIT Connect tonight, I think it's their biggest fundraiser of the year that helped promote and support the women in technology.
Yeah, and we did that last year, had a blast. I was fascinated, taken back is probably more accurate, at the dollars that are spent, and they all go to a good cause,
right?
But just to get some time with some
time
of these
with
execs.
Some chief information officers at some of the largest companies in town and also around the country. Different companies bid on them, so they buy lunch for them, and the bidding can get
crazy.
$10,000, $20,000, $30,000 for a lunch.
But we're going to get some real host talent to help us out tonight.
And, that's right.
Elizabeth Gordon's going to join us, right?
Yep.
So you and I might get to play a little bit more this time around.
Yes.
But we have real talent here in the room, and this is going to be a fantastic segment. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Merritt Davis, media personality and co-host of Atlanta Eats. That's going to be a fun conversation. And we're going to catch up with the folks at the Children's Museum. We're going to get a chance to visit with Jane Turner. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce a gentleman from Infosys. Please join me in welcoming to the show, Mr. Sandeep Deadlani. How you doing, man?
Very good. Thank you for having me.
And how well did I just do on that last name?
You did great. You pronounced it exactly the way it is pronounced.
My work is done here. So Infosys, what are you guys out there doing for folks, and who exactly are you doing it for?
Well, we are a $7.4 billion consulting, technology, and business process management firm. We usually work with mostly global 2000 firms, large firms that you can think of across industries.
And then what are you guys doing for them?
We do three things with them largely. One is we help them optimize their operations, both IT as well as business process operations. The second thing we do for them is drive business transformation, you know, large kind of enterprise transformation programs. And then finally, we help them co-create with their key business innovation programs. And so these three things put together forms a wide range of services for companies. 60-70% of our business comes from American clients.
Mm-hmm.
A very large presence in America, more than 16,000-17,000 employees. And in Atlanta as well. Atlanta is a big Southeast hub for us, so that's why we're here today.
So why exactly Atlanta? Why is it such a big hub for you?
Well, you know, when you try and look at setting up headquarters or a hub, you look at the infrastructure. Atlanta has great infrastructure if you don't count the rush hour traffic. You have a great airport, proximity to big clients here, big universities, so access to talent. And then the local setup here between the Metro Atlanta Chamber of Commerce, the COP Chamber of Commerce, the Georgia Economic Development Authority, et cetera. These guys are really helping businesses set up shop. So the combination of both talent, clients, education, universities, airport, et cetera, is unbeatable, frankly. So that's why we set up shop here.
And then the talent is an important component of it, right?
Oh, absolutely. Our business, just like our clients' businesses, is all about leadership and talent development. And this is a big deal. That's one of the reasons we're in Atlanta. I mean, the universities like Emory here, Georgia Tech, Kennesaw State, et cetera, we really rely on that. It's a cosmopolitan workforce which really wants to make careers out of their lives, very ambitious workforce. That is one of the key reasons we're here.
Now, how do you develop the talent and move them from the the public school or this private school system here as young kids, and then get them through the universities, and then get them ready for the jobs that are out there? Because I would imagine in your sector, the jobs there's more jobs than talent right now.
That's absolutely right. I mean, Metro Atlanta today reports an unemployment rate of anywhere between 7% and 9%.
Right, but in your world, it isn't that.
It's not. You're right. In the data processing world, in the IT world, in the skills-based jobs world, it's in the STEM graduates world.
Right, it's negative.
It's probably negative, exactly. There are lots of employers who want to hire the skilled talent, and they don't. They can't find them. The skills gap is real. We're doing a bunch of things. We, first of all, are working with the university ecosystem at Kennesaw State, Georgia Tech, at Chattahoochee Technical College.
And you're trying to grow your own talent?
Exactly.
To fill the position for your to fill your positions, right?
Exactly. We talk to them. We help them with the curriculum. We work with Georgia Economic Development Authority has a program called Quick Start to get people to be industry ready. Now, we are helping Quick Start define their curriculum as well, saying, hey, these are the kind of jobs we need. We need jobs in sales and fulfillment processes, order management processes, healthcare, mortgage, life insurance, Medicaid, Medicare kind of jobs. Now, those kind of jobs, students just don't just come out of college saying, hey, I'm ready for this.
Right.
They have a different idea of the world. We help to educate them in terms of how to work in a global company. What are the kind of skill sets you need? And then hopefully they can come out ready enough. Then we have our own training courses within the company, as I'm sure many Atlanta companies do. And then they're ready.
But now, in the past, were the kids more ready to start working immediately? And now you're having to train them kind of from scratch, and you don't want to do that. That's why you're working with the universities to kind of get them where you're just tweaking their skills rather than building their skills from the ground up.
If you can't tell, this is a sore spot or an area of focus, let's call it, for Lee, is university curriculum and really preparing them for real world work.
Right.
I can see that from your the key thing here is getting them ready, not just on a focused skill set, but getting them ready to be flexible, to be able to work in a global environment. Today, when an Atlanta graduate competes for a job, he or she is competing with a graduate from Brazil, a graduate from China for the same job. First of all, she shouldn't be hung up that job's going to be in Atlanta and it's going to be 9 to 5.
Right.
It could be anywhere in the world.
And you got to be open to that.
And you got to be open to that. You got to be flexible about the kind of job. You may have trained as a skilled engineer. Now, the first kind of profile you get could be that of managing an order management fulfillment process, nothing that you learned in school. You cannot have a typeset saying, I will work for Coca-Cola in Atlanta from 9 to 5 on this kind of a job. So I think the attitude has to change from what kind of job will I get to how can I make a career, a global career, because that's what they're up against.
Now, how do these online kind of
MOOCs.
How do they fit into the equation?
You know this term, MOOCs?
Absolutely.
Now, because those things, why don't you first explain what they are to the listeners and then explain how that fits in? Because that's kind of counter what a traditional university offers.
No, I think a lot of universities have come to realize the global trend. It first started with a small kind of teacher called CanAcademy.com, which really started teaching school children on YouTube videos on basic math, etc. Now Stanford, Harvard, Georgia Tech, everybody is onto this massive online education programs where lectures are literally streamed out.
And sometimes for no charge.
For no charge, yeah. Sometimes it's free.
Because that's a disruption to the university system, a no-charge education.
I agree. It's kind of like, other services where you get a large-scale service free, but then you start paying premium for specialized education. I think it's made these universities more popular. Within companies, at least within Infosys, I know, we run large online training programs. We have 155,000 employees worldwide. We just simply cannot train everybody in a lecture room.
Right, in front with a classroom with somebody standing in front, right?
Absolutely. So the video-based mass training, interactive training programs are really, really popular. We, in fact, work here at the YWCA. We give a big grant to the Teen Girls in Technology program for STEM, encouraging them again to get online, get more educated with these kind of programs. That's worked very well for us. Frankly, it's one of the key levers we have to kind of make the skilled workforce even more ready.
Now, in your company, if somebody went through, say, Code Academy, right, and went through their thing and became an expert at coding, and they came to you to interview, how would you hold that skill if you needed a coder as opposed to somebody who went through a college education and has the same skill? Would you look at them as similar, or would you be okay with that?
Yeah, so, currently we're hiring both technology skill graduates like the coder you talked about and general business process management graduates in the areas of processes I talked about. But what we are evaluating in an interview is not just those basic skills. We're evaluating learnability. Is this person good at coding, but within 6 months, is this person ready to learn new things? Right. Is he open to it, or is he set upon coding in one language for the next 20 years? Well, then he won't survive in the next 6 months.
Right. They got to be kind of like lifelong learners.
Lifelong
learners,
important, exactly.
Important skill nowadays.
The second thing is flexibility, and the third thing is adaptability to a global culture. They're going to be in cross-functional teams with you know, Europeans on the other side, Chinese on the other side, crazy time zones, et cetera, et cetera. Those kind of things are something we're looking to more than anything else. You know, frankly, coding, you know a little bit, you don't know, you can get them trained on that stuff very easily. Mm-hmm. It's the mindset, it's the attitude, which is more important.
So what's your backstory? How did you fall into this line of work?
You know, I was used to work in Citigroup as in the investment bank in Bombay. And 13 years ago, my wife moved here in her assignment. And that assignment kept getting longer and longer. So I said, before I, you know, anything goes wrong, I should move here. And so Infosys at that time was compared to Citigroup, was a small startup, $300 million in size. I said, well, let's try this out. It's been 13 years in Atlanta. Most of the time has been spent during the week on Delta Airlines. But, you know, it's been fun, you know, seeing the growth of Infosys in Atlanta. We recently made a big announcement of adding more than, 200 jobs in the next 12 months.
Wow.
Here in the Cobb County, Atlanta area. So it's been fun riding that growth curve personally for me as well.
Now, can you share a little bit about the Global Impact Award?
Yeah, so Metro Atlanta Chamber of Commerce, people like Jorge Fernandez, Hans Grant, these guys are really leading companies, global businesses into Atlanta to make investments here, to grow into the ecosystem here. So what Infosys did is, you know, not just say, hey, I'm setting up shop and expanding jobs here. We invested in the YWCA. We invested in the university ecosystem. We decided to, you know, change curriculums, impact people, do guest lectures. I personally went and did a bunch of guest lectures. I still do for a couple of colleges. And all that results in the acknowledgement that Infosys has been one of the bigger investors in the Atlanta region. So we got the Global Impact Award acknowledging our FDI, or foreign direct investment, into Atlanta. We're very proud of it. And, you know, thank the Metro Atlanta Chamber of Commerce and the other guys who helped out, Cobb Chamber of Commerce, Georgia Economic Development Authority with their leader, Gretchen Cobbin. And all of those guys have contributed to it. They've made introductions for us. They've introduced us to talent, to partners, to infrastructure, et cetera. All that helps a business like us inspire confidence in investing more in Atlanta.
Right, and putting down these firm roots here and building this foundation with the community. It's super important.
So let's dive into this internship program. I think you call it INSTEP.
Yep.
Walk us through that a little bit, if you will.
So we've had INSTEP now as a global internship program for more than 12 years. You know, we've taken a lot of graduates from Georgia Tech, actually, and from other top schools all over the country.
So it's internships for college students.
Yes, exactly, mm-hmm. for grad college students. And, you know, we've taken, for example, a Georgia Tech graduate would intern with us for about 3 months, would go to India, which is our global headquarters.
Wow.
And would literally have a three-month, I like to call it a paid vacation, but they get to do some work. They go through a whole bunch of courses, programs, live projects, and they join a global team. So they're people from Europe and other parts of Asia, all converging there into our training centers. And they have a great three-month period. We've had corporations that we work with who sent their people then, you know, to join this program as well to get oriented on the other side of the world. That global perspective is extremely important, frankly. And, you know, each of these interns who've joined have had tremendous experiences, great Facebook pictures, and then wanting to join the company back again. So,
how long has the program been going on?
It's been on for most part of 12, 13 years now, and it's been very successful. Now, we are doing smaller internships here in Atlanta now with our Atlanta-based growth, taking people in from colleges for short assignments in the Atlanta office and then, you know, sending them back. Because, again, that's motivating the local workforce here to
right.
keep joining us in large numbers.
Do you bring people from your international offices here to Atlanta to do kind of the inverse of the trip to India for the Americans?
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, any one of our offices you enter into in the United States, or frankly, anywhere in the world, it is a mishmash of cultures and languages and accents that you can ever imagine. Mm-hmm. And that is by design, frankly. It's a global company. We're looking for talent that is available globally anywhere to deliver services to our clients who are, you know, top corporations in the world. And so you'll find a lot of cross-pollination going on between talent all over the world within Infosys offices.
Now, you said you spent some time doing guest lecturing and talking to college kids here in town. What has been, you know, what have you learned from that, and how has that affected your kind of the way that you work, do your job?
Well, you know, I mean, I've done some guest lectures, and I keep doing them, in fact, for, you know, some professors are good friends of mine, and they keep inviting me back. However, intolerable I could be for the kids in Georgia Tech and Kennesaw State. And what I find is, you know, the raw talent that America has, at least these two are great schools, is fantastic. These are very, very bright kids. They are more global. They are more kind of open in their kind of outlook than, you know, probably kids, say, 20 years ago, I would imagine, in Georgia or India or anywhere else, I'd say. They're ambitious as well. They want to learn. I think the key is for them to shape them. I think shaping that talent, teaching them the right things, getting them ready and getting them flexible, that is key. I still find some students sometimes being less inflexible about what kind of job they're going to get or where they're going to work. And, you know, each time I see that, I encourage them to be extremely open about, you know, location, about flexibility, and to look out for making global careers. I think this is the age we live in is phenomenal for technology and industry growth. And if students really take it upon themselves, they can make a heck of a career right now in the world.
Now, if you had any advice for high school age kids, what would that be?
I think, you know, focus on the STEM programs. Those are going to be important in life. Those are high focus. Second is be flexible. Look out for new experiences. I found some kids going for the Duke TIPS program recently from Duke University, and Georgia Tech has robotics programs here. We have a whole vast set of resources around us, not very expensive. It's about going out there, looking for them, and grabbing those opportunities, being flexible, looking for global experiences for those who can afford it. Look for global experiences. Look for a European trip, an Asian trip, a South American trip. And then, you know, working and being, you know, as learnable as possible. As in, I use that word particularly. There's nothing in the dictionary. But learnable means really someone who will learn a new skill every 6 months. That would be my advice.
So I want to hear more about this shaping, I think you called it, but particularly the early days, the onboarding process. Speak to that a little bit at Infosys, if you will.
Sure, yeah. No, in Atlanta, the talent we're hiring go through a 2 to 6 week training process, and what we're teaching them are some of the basic skills of the kind of processes they're going to work in. You know, for example, right now the batch is going through, you know, customer service, technical help desk, Medicare, Medicaid kind of processes, and getting them familiar with that. More importantly, we're teaching them how to work with global teams as well. Now, globally, Infosys runs a kind of 3-month finishing course in our global education center in Mysore, where all our global graduates really converge and go through this training course. This is the largest corporate university in the world. It simultaneously trains 15,000 people at a time. So it's bigger than most universities that you can think of. And it's all residential, so it's got dorms, etc. You can YouTube it. But that program, again, goes through core technical skills training, a lot of soft skills training, a lot of, you know, global team kind of working training as well. All of these are prestigious by themselves. People love to aspire to get through that training as a resume item for their own good.
Well, there must be something just ingrained in your culture that equips the mid-level manager to coach and reinforce that mindset and those skills.
Yeah, absolutely. I think 5% of our profits go into, you know, R&D, training, coaching, these kind of investments. So that has been a philosophy of the founders of the company all along.
So what's next? And we'd love to help any way we can, so we want to know how we can help, but I think it would have to involve a trip to India to have the proper context.
To really immerse ourselves in the culture.
Exactly. Yeah. But what's next and how can we help?
Well, we're hiring, so the you know, the email ID to apply is bpous_careers@infosys.com. That is for the business process management side. Now, Infosys is hiring globally all the time, so you can always go to the infosys.com website. We continue to invest globally as well. Most importantly for Atlanta, since you guys influence the Atlanta world so much, you know, I would request you to continue spreading the word of how to bridge the skills gap. That'll help us. That'll help Coca-Cola. That'll help Home Depot, CNN, everybody in trying to bridge that gap. That would be probably my request and message to you as well, to keep you know, encouraging our talent to be more industry ready, more global, and frankly make Atlanta more competitive that way.
All right. Well, before we wrap, let's make sure once again that our listeners have some coordinates so they can reach out, learn more, and talk to whomever they need to talk to.
Sure. Well, the website is simple, infosys.com, infosys.com. If they're looking for a job in the kind of areas I described, then they email bpous_careers@infosys.com. And then I'm always around in Atlanta. I live in Kennesaw here for the last 13 years, and I've really enjoyed every bit of Atlanta. So my email is sandeep_dadlani@infosys.com.
So, Lee, we got to take a page out of their book. I think we should have finishing school here at Business Radio X. Don't you think? Like, don't you think Kevin would be a good candidate for finishing school?
Do you mind working with Kevin?
Kevin looks great right now. Let's take Kevin on in our training program.
He's been flawless through the entire first segment, I have to admit. Hey, listen, how about hanging out with us a little bit while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely. We enjoy it. Thank you.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us media personality and co-host for Atlanta Eats, Miss Mara Davis. How you doing, sunshine?
I'm doing well. Good to see all of you. And is there any positions left for that indie internship? Because that sounds amazing.
There's a skills gap for radio hosts, so we'll all battle for that spot.
That sounds so cool.
So always welcome.
Thank you.
How cool is it to have a genuine media personality in the studio?
Genuine. It's like genuine leather.
So tell us first, though, about Atlanta Eats. What's that all about?
So I'm really, really excited about this. The brand new show that was founded by Steak Shapiro, who is the great radio host on 790 The Zone. I think the longest running sports radio host, and I think the best in the city. He's one of my favorite and a friend. And they have put together this show, and it's kind of based on a show that started in Boston called The Phantom Gourmet. And this has been around for almost 20 years where they go around to different restaurants and feature them on TV, and it's become a huge success. So basically they've kind of taken that model and applied it to Atlanta. And some of their inspiration comes from, and they talk about this all the time, the book A Man in Full. You guys are familiar with that book, which was all about Atlanta. And they describe Atlanta as restaurants in Atlanta are our theater. And that's very much the case because I think Atlanta is the most exciting dining city in, you know, of course you talk about New York or San Francisco or Chicago, but Atlanta just has so much going for it. And there is not a television show to focus on it. I mean, there's tons of blogs and people are obsessed with food and dining. I mean, now when you go to a restaurant, don't you see people taking a picture of their meal and tweeting it out? So this has become a very, very big thing. So I'm very, very excited to be a part of it. It is a brand new company. They haven't even been around for years. And I will mention it is AtlantaEats.com, but the show is on Saturday mornings, 10:30 on Peachtree TV and noon on CBS Atlanta.
And format for the show?
The format is they go ahead and feature several restaurants. It may be 3-4 restaurants in a show. And it's all levels of dining. So it could be the street food on the corner or it could be super high-end. And it's kind of showing that Atlanta has it all. You've got the great ethnic food on Buford Highway, but you can do a 5-star Bacchanalia. You know, you can really dine out or a budget or just blow it out on a corporate expense account.
So now this must be fun for you. You're getting to sample all the finest dining here in town.
Oh, my God, it's the greatest.
What a great job.
The minute it was announced, you know, there are so many food PR companies. And, you know, working in radio for so long, I got to know a lot of those people. So I've gotten some good gift cards and perks. Yes, yes, for sure.
That's why we started the restaurant show,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, just for
that
reason.
That's the only reason we did it.
That's right. It's good.
Now, any favorites?
Favorite restaurants? Well, instead of favorites, I'll tell you some notable ones that I think are worth trying. There's a new restaurant called Gun Show, and this is Kevin Gillespie's restaurant. Kevin Gillespie, you may remember from Top Chef.
Sure.
And he has opened this restaurant that is so much fun. It is so unique because I think it is dinner theater for foodies. And here's what I mean by that. The concept is dim sum. So what they do is they'll make all these great meals and they come by to your table and they're like, this is a crab cake and it's got a local, you know, arugula. And so it's up to you to decide whether you want it or not. And it's kind of dangerous because everything that walks by, you're like, yes, I'll have it. But it's so cool because if you watch Top Chef, you know, that's part of the appeal where like food is the new rock stars, you know. Yeah. So you see Kevin coming by and not only are you excited to see Kevin because he's from Top Chef, but you're like, wow, you were just back there making it. And now I feel like I'm obligated to try it. And everything was really delicious. Another thing I loved about Gun Show is I love communal dining. Like I love sitting at a big table where you're forced to talk to the people sitting next to you. And we had such a great experience because we're meeting people and like, oh, you've got to try the scallop. Oh, you've got to try this pork belly. So it really was a terrific experience.
So now you came from terrestrial radio and now you're not there anymore.
Not by choice.
you've graduated.
I guess so. I mean, I think terrestrial radio is going through an interesting phase right now. And I'm really curious to see how...
Like the dinosaurs went through a phase?
I think that's a part of it, Lee. I think, you know, here's the thing. This week especially, with the announcement of Apple and bringing you music radio and all these channels, and, you know, as we all know, Apple is such a leader in everything. And when they say they're going to have a radio program, I think if I'm a terrestrial radio executive, I should be keeping my eye on that. And with there are a lot of music sharing services between Pandora and Spotify, and you have satellite. And I really hope for terrestrial radio that they can focus more on personality. I mean, just listening to your story about what it's like for careers, how it's applying to Atlanta, I find that very interesting. And I think that's what terrestrial radio, that is what they have going for it, and they're not using it to their advantage. Listen, you can listen to radio all over the world. You can listen. We're listening to this today. But to what terrestrial radio has going for it is local, and they really need to get back to that. So I really hope that that can change. I would love to be back on the radio. I really, really would. But right now they like syndication and robots, and right, I am not that.
But don't you think that's where – they're missing, like you said, it's localized. It has to be hyper-local for them to be relevant in a given market. Otherwise, you can choose Spotify and if you want to listen to rock music.
It's so true. I went to a concert on last Friday night. There's a new band I love called Dawes. They're so great. They're like a modern-day Eagles meets Steely Dan meets Neil Young. They're really, really great. Now, I only learned about them from satellite radio. And right. A band opened up called Shovels and Rope. I wasn't familiar with them. They opened up, so guess what? I mean, I went home, I got on Spotify, and I listened to all their music. You know, the only thing that was missing was somebody telling me or talking to me about how cool it was at the Buckhead Theater. So I missed that on local radio. And the hardest thing for me, I think, is I miss the people so much. I love the idea in terrestrial radio where I had people listening to me. You could be a doctor, you could be a construction worker, you could be a mom, you could be a business executive, but everybody kind of had Atlanta and the music in common. And I really, really hope terrestrial can get back to that. And if not, are you guys hiring?
Hey, we're always looking for
always
talent.
Always looking for talent, aren't we?
So
now we've talked about terrestrial, we talked about internet a little bit, but you're a big Howard Stern fan on satellite. What do you like about Howard?
Well, I would say big fan is putting it lightly. I'm an insane super fan.
So you're
fan.
Part of the Whack Pack?
I could be a Whack Packer. Like, I could be. Here's what I love about Howard. When you listen to an interview on Howard Stern, it's an hour long.
Right. And it's long form.
And he can really go deep with a celebrity. But I also love I think the key to Howard's success is he is such a big star that he is not afraid to let the other people around him shine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's lost on a lot of radio people. They're so busy, big, wacky, and laughing. When Howard has the Whack Pack, as you mentioned, so there's all these people sharing the spotlight. He is confident in his own talent where all these other people are funny too. It's episodic. So I always want to hear about whatever freak is doing whatever. And I particularly love the celebrity interviews. I mean, just in the past couple of weeks, you've had Rod Stewart, you had Seth Rogen, you know, you've had, you know, of course, there's, you know, throw in a porn star, fine. But at the same time, even though there is that blue component to the show, you may be listening to an interview with an adult film star, but you may have heard about like her troubled family life or some experience that she's had. So I think he is an absolute radio genius, and I give him so much credit because he couldn't deal with terrestrial radio anymore, and he walked away from a lot, and a lot of people have criticized him because he lost a majority of his audience by walking away to satellite. But I'll tell you, it is worth every penny. And it's, again, it's another reason we're another way where terrestrial needs to catch up. You know, there's an app that I listen to on my phone, so I listen to the shows on demand. So I don't necessarily have to wait to hear it. I can just hear it at my leisure. And but yeah, I'm a super fan. I did the Howard TV even, but I got burnt out on that. I had to cancel that.
That was a little too much.
Well, that's to your a little point, over the top.
And what Lee talks about all the time is this long form where you can really dive into a person's backstory and learn really what they're up to. And it sounds like Howard, I don't have satellites, so I don't have the benefit of this so much. But
no, he'll interview a person for an hour and a half.
So you can learn a lot about a celebrity. You go way beyond the superficial stuff, it sounds like.
Yeah, he will stay on as long as until it's time to go.
So, for example, and maybe you heard this, so Rod Stewart was on.
Right.
It was a tremendous interview because, you know, you have these preconceived notions of what Rod Stewart was about. When I heard he was coming on, I thought it was going to be all about the wives and, you know, his sex life. And it so wasn't that. It was more about the music and how it all came together and being best friends with Ron Wood. And, you know, one thing that people don't talk about with Howard is he is less concerned with people's sex lives and he is more concerned with how much money you make. He is big time into that.
He always asks.
Always wants to know, you know, how much did you have to pay those wives? What are you worth?
Right.
And I'm interested in that too.
Yeah, and his is like one of the last remaining. You wait in your carport till he finishes something before you turn off the car, right?
That's absolutely true. And I loved doing that so much. Unfortunately, and I used to do a lot more long-form interviews on my radio show, but there's a new ratings measurement service called PPM, and that was introduced a couple of years ago. And that completely cut back on any long-form talk on terrestrial radio because these people in the corner offices with the spreadsheets, they are only looking at those numbers. So in their mind, it's, you got to get it done in 90 seconds or less. You know, you people just don't have time. And in many ways, that's not a bad point because, look, we all have lives. We all have our cell phones. We all have a shorter attention span. But at the same time, if you're putting out good quality content, I do believe that people will listen.
Right, and they'll stay with you. They'll be loyal to you.
Yes.
And when you are dealing with chunks of time in seconds, you don't have any loyalty. It's a transaction. So I'm going to move up. You know, if I have ADD, I'm going to move on to the next thing, which could be another channel.
Well, that's right. Look, I can get a Maroon 5 song on any music service, and that's the crazy thing. So, and this is where I'm so I'm perplexed with things like, okay, if you look at the three biggest hits on the Billboard charts from last year, you think Gangnam Style, Somebody I Used to Know, and Call Me Maybe. Well, guess what? All of those songs were breakout hits from YouTube, not from radio.
Right, that's where they started.
So radio is not breaking music. So like my son loves that thrift shop song. Okay, it's the Mac Lamore. Okay, loves it. And you may remember, like back in the day, you'd sit and you'd wait for the radio to play it. Not anymore. I just have to do a Google search, and I have it in less than 10 seconds.
Right.
So this is a problem that, like I said, and this is weird too. Like I had been on the radio for 18 years in the same time doing middays. I had done other shifts on and off. So now I'm actually a listener at that time slot. Now I am my audience. And there is nothing for me. Like, I don't want that Maroon 5 song. I don't want a right-wing crazy person telling me that women, you know, are feminazis. You know, I can't. Give me something that's compelling and interesting, and I am just waiting for that to happen.
Well, that's the beauty of the internet and satellite. You can find that. I mean, look in Sirius. How many different country music choices do you have within Sirius? I mean, they have, what, 10 different genres that are super narrow?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, there's one station that I like on Sirius called Spectrum because that was like the Dave FM. That's the closest thing to Dave FM on there. But, yeah, I'm really hoping for a change. I'm following the radio industry very closely. But, again, I'm very excited about Atlanta Eats. So it's kind of like until until things start to change, you know, as you can tell, I'm a very chatty, big personality, and I will never be a robot, and I will never – I mean, listen, I can read a liner card in my sleep. I couldn't tell you today's best hits of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Coming up, the voices – you know, what's the guy's name? I already forgot. Adam Levine. Okay, I have to rehearse a little bit. But, you know, that I can't relate to that. I want somebody with a pulse.
Well, you know, I've been seeing advertisements that operating systems and more connectivity, you're going to be able to get internet in your car.
Yes.
So that's a whole other layer to put on top of this.
And here's what's interesting about this. I followed something called the Worldwide Radio Conference, and this is the great thing about digital. So I'm addicted to Twitter, and there was a hashtag Worldwide Radio Conference. So I was sort of following over a weekend what these big radio executives were talking about. And they're all fighting it. They're all saying we don't have to worry about this. This is happening. Loyal automakers, this and that. And in a way, okay, is this going to affect the industry in the next 5 years? Probably not. In the next 10 years, a little. In the next 15 to 20 years, absolutely. And they need to do a better job, I think. You know, a radio station is a lifestyle. I remember growing up in the radio stations I loved. You wanted to put that sticker on your car. You wanted to feel like you were a part of it. And we've got – the business has gotten away from that. And now, more than ever, a radio station needs to have that presence on your terrestrial signal, but also online, on Facebook, on Twitter, blogging. Your personality is doing video. It's more than just a music delivery service, because people are getting their music other places. So
right, that it's going to be more personality driven, and
I hope so.
Yeah, that's what you're betting on yourself, right?
But if not, but you know, that's the whole thing. Is like it's. I've gone through this feeling about it where I'm so excited about other opportunities because you know I can't.
You can't wait for them.
You can't.
Right. You got to choose yourself. And you got to bet on your brand. I mean, you have a brand, and you should leverage it in any format it goes.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here. I think what you guys are doing is a great concept. And I think that's, you know, internet radio is an interesting phase into the industry as well. And I think terrestrials just sort of looks at these things like, oh, these are little things. We don't have to worry about
it. Yeah, tell that to Newsweek, because Newsweek used to be a print magazine and now is a blog.
Well, basically. That's right. I mean, you know.
I hate to break the news to the media.
Tell that to
this is the future.
The biggest comparison that I would bring this to is the music industry. If you look at the music industry when Napster came on the scene and all of the I'll never forget watching the Grammy Awards, and the head of the Grammy Association was on the Grammy saying, you know, down with those illegal downloaders. And it's like, hey, no, don't fight it. Embrace it.
You better figure it out.
Find a way to do, you know, and guess what? So finally, hey, music industry, we finally figured out that you've charged us $20 for a product that cost you less than $1 to make in a CD. Remember all those CDs we bought that cost
right,
a fortune in those giant boxes? Right. And that's kind of, you know, now the music industry, they're not in the business of selling albums anymore. They're in the business of selling singles because iTunes changed right. The way we consume music. So if the radio industry can kind of get on board with this, and there are some companies, look, I'll give it to Clear Channel. Clear Channel is one of the few companies that started their iHeartRadio. They were a leading force in digital. But more of these companies, I mean, look, my station, Dave FM, may it rest in peace, became a sports station. Okay. Sports is the hot format du jour. This is if you read the industry newspapers, this is the new thing because that's their way of kind of combating music services. But you know, it's an interesting challenge. So now you've got a city of four sports radio stations in one market, one of them being Spanish, and you know, so they're all fighting for that very small piece of the pie.
Well, I'm really kind of unhappy with the Spanish one because I think they overtook the Comedy Channel.
And a lot of people are upset about that.
I was really enjoying the Comedy Channel.
I was as well. I was upset about it too. I think the Comedy Channel was sort of a great example of content because you're providing something original. It's something that you can't get everywhere else. And You know, it's a real shame. I, you know, it's so funny because people complain to me all the time, like, what did you do to the Comedy Station? I'm like,
it was your fault.
So, you know.
But now you have some ideas about, you believe that there is room for and a genuine need for an all-women's talk radio network as well.
I do.
Speak to that a little bit.
Okay, so here's the thing. I gave a speech recently at a Women in Media lunch. And Vicky Locke, who just announced yesterday she is leaving B98.5. Her father is ill, and she has decided that she is leaving the business and starting her own business. And Vicky Locke is one of my heroes. And one thing I learned about being at this brunch or this lunch was that women in media or women in business really do a great job of embracing each other. I think there's this perception of people are in competition with each other, and it's so not like that. My experience with the other women that I worked with is, how can we help each other out? How can we back each other up? And when I lost my job, I learned that in a great way, where so many people came and supported me. So anyway, I gave this speech about what women are facing in broadcasting, and I was doing some research on the speech, and I had an epiphany. I tried to think, who are the leading industry women in talk radio or in radio in general, okay? Who are the industry leaders in talk radio? And guess what? I couldn't come up with anybody. Laura Ingraham, okay, maybe you could say her, but she's not even an industry leader. She gets more attention for being on Fox News or doing that. She's not really she's not on the same level as a Hannity, a Limbaugh, or Eric Erickson. She's just not there. Who else do we have? Delilah? Okay. But besides that, who is there?
Yeah, is it? Right. I'm coming up empty.
It's
yeah.
Dr. Laura.
Okay, Dr. Laura. I mean, okay, she had her time in the sun, right? You know,
Randy Rhodes.
I love Randy, but Randy, I wouldn't call an industry leader.
I'm trying.
Exactly. That's the thing. It's really, really hard. And I think, you know, look, as I said, sports is a trendy format. I think because it is men in the industry who want to say, you can't have two women together. I was told that myself. There was a position.
Ouch.
There was a position open. I won't say where.
Where what does it rhyme with?
They were looking for a co-host for a marquee show. And I said, can I please be a consideration for this show? And they said, no, we really want a male. And I said, but I'm probably more man than anybody who works on the show. And I wasn't even a consideration because I was a female. So think about that. Would that ever be said to a man? No, it wouldn't. So, and it's all this mindset. And even people close to me in the industry would say, two women can't go do a show together. They just can't. It's never worked. It'll never work. And I sit and wonder because I'm like, now I'm home. So I watch The View, The Talk, Kathy Lee and Hoda, yeah, Kelly Ripa.
Somehow they're managing.
Okay, somehow there's a sea of these programs that are targeted towards women. Where are they on radio? I don't want to listen to a show that's targeted to, I'm Susan's mom at yahoo.com. Like, I'm a mom, but that doesn't define me. And I don't see anything like that. So I'm kind of on this quest to kind of change the mind of these executives.
So
because
do it yourself. Make your own.
Well, I'm trying. Let's sign it up. I'm convincing you, aren't I? There are no females. And we're also learning that 4 out of 10 women are the breadwinners. Okay? So these women are making the decisions in the home. And we have to listen, and I have to listen to Payphone by Maroon 5 all day.
No, you don't.
That is what
you don't
I get.
Have to. You
okay,
don't have
but
to.
That's why I go back to Howard Stern, because right. Howard Stern is talking to me. I can relate to it. I'm listening to the news. I mean, there may be a butt joke in there, but listen, women are in many ways more foul than guys. My favorite TV show is Amy Schumer Show, Inside Amy Schumer.
Okay, right. That's Howard Stern light.
Right. So I keep saying it aloud, and I really believe hard in it. So I think there is an opportunity for change, and there are a lot of great women talent out there who we can't get work because, you know, they're just, you know, they want me to talk like this. And I'm just not going to do it.
Look, choose yourself. Make it happen.
That's right. Well, I mean, Lee and I both believe that women in general are smarter, they're more collaborative, they're better with money. And back to an earlier point in the conversation, I believe, just out of the box, that women are probably a little better equipped. Their mindset lends itself more to letting the guest shine instead of necessarily having to stroke their own ego by being the star of the show, which is, as you observed, that's an important aspect of the long form radio.
It really is. And in interviewing, and by the way, you guys are doing an excellent job.
Thank you.
in interviewing, I mean, that is the key. I mean, the key to doing a good interview is listening and being prepared. And I think so many interviews, I mean, that was one problem I always had when comedians came in, because I always wanted to sort of get to know a comedian as opposed to you just telling me your jokes.
Right.
So I think that, yes, women are better, to your point.
All right. So as we wrap, let's leave our listeners with contact information so they can watch and listen to Atlanta Eats, and if they want to get in touch with you.
Well, follow me on Twitter at Mara Davis. I'm a total Twitter addict. And my website is maradavis.com, atlantaeats.com, and you can check it out every Saturday at 10:30 on Peachtree TV and noon on CBS Atlanta.
Well, it has been an absolute delight visiting with you this morning.
And we are going to talk. Well. And I totally want that India internship. I want to go.
See, we got you hooked up. And we are going to talk more, because we need to collaborate on any variety of projects. So don't be surprised if you hear Mara Davis on a Business Radio X microphone again soon. Hey, hang with us while we visit with our next guest,
absolutely,
will you? Absolutely. All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us from the Children's Museum, Miss Jane Turner. Good morning, sunshine.
Good morning.
You have been so patient, so polite. You've been just kind of taking it all in. I don't know if you took any notes or not, but it certainly seemed like you were engaged.
Mental notes. This has been fascinating. It's a great group here.
So get us caught up. What's happening at the Children's Museum?
Well, we have just kicked off our summer, and we've just opened last Saturday a new feature exhibit called Weebles Coast to Coast. It is so much fun and deeply educational. It takes visitors on a visit, literally, to all 50 states. So I feel like I'm the only person in Atlanta who can say, hey, want to come down and see Old Faithful today? We can do that. Want to play with a jazz band in Louisiana? You can do that. Want to go on a dog sled ride in Alaska? Gotcha. So it is so much fun, and I have watched visitors this week just from littles to parents really engaged. It's so much fun.
Now, is it still true that weebles wobble, but they don't fall down?
They do not fall down. It's amazing. They defy all scientific, gravity and everything else.
So they're the same weebles from back in
the
day. The
same weebles. Quite honestly, there aren't very many actual weebles in this exhibit at all. There's some pictures of weebles, but it's really about the visit to the States, and that has been so much fun.
Now, the Children's Museum, they were like one of the first things on Centennial Park, right?
We say that we were the first thing. I mean, CNN was down there, and, of course, Centennial right. Olympic Park was
but not
there.
Like right on the park.
Not right on the park. And so, yeah, there was a great leap of faith to open on the park at that point. So the museum's been open for 10 years.
So what exactly is the mission? How would you articulate the mission of the Children's Museum?
The mission is really to inspire discovery and learning through the power of play. And there is great power in play, especially not just for children, but especially for children. But it's really for all of us. If you can even try to imagine a world with zero play, it's a pretty grim experience. But even in listening to our friend guest from Emphasis, we see the future every day at the museum. So if the future means a global society full of people who can really think outside the box, who have imagination, who can collaborate, it starts very young. And if you don't create experiences for young children where they can explore freely, try things out, you're not going to have adults who can do that, quite honestly.
Now, I wonder if there's an opportunity for Emphasis to, I know you're getting involved with the college and high school age where that's very tactical and practical for what you're doing, but maybe there's some creative elements that you can, collaborate with the Children's Museum to foster that kind of imagination and that lifelong learning skill.
I think that's a great idea. My kids, 7 and 10, love the Children's Museum themselves. We've been there several times. We're going to visit that Weebles thing, and then who knows, something might happen.
Yep, it would be great. We collaborate with really so many organizations in our community, not only places like the aquarium and the botanical gardens and the zoo, but also with companies, because while many organizations are about specific topics, we're really about everything.
Mm-hmm.
We're about the child, introducing children to our community, to the world, to themselves, to possibility.
Now, can you, for people who haven't been there or haven't been there in a while, can you talk a little bit about what the experience is like? Do you have permanent exhibits and then these kind of exhibits that change? What's the experience like?
It is so multisensory. We have four permanent learning zones, we call them, which are exhibit areas, and then we bring in a changing exhibit three times a year, which allows us to really focus on different topics. We also have, so there's the exhibit area, the physical experience, but we also have programs that are going on every day. We have cooking classes, we have science workshops, we have summer camps, we have a troupe of professional actors called the Imaginators. And so for every exhibit that we bring, we develop a 20-minute mini musical that highlights the concepts of that exhibit, kind of pulls it together. And it's fun and it's engaging and it's a lot of children's first experience with live theater in a very comfortable setting.
I've got it. I think we should send Mara down there and do radio camp.
I would love that.
Wouldn't that be
okay,
cool?
We're done.
I would love that.
How cool would that be?
I would love that. As we've met before,
yes.
And I'm a huge fan of the Children's Museum ever since it started. So, yes, radio camp.
Now, what's the age range of the kids that attend?
We are focused for children under 9 mm-hmm. years old, and there's a reason for that. That's where we're really capturing the attention of children that age. Over 9, we're in the summers, we kind of see older kids that come in with families who are on vacation, and so our exhibits are geared to appeal to a broader range. But really, there's so much that children gravitate towards as they get older. So we've really focused on that age range.
Now, is there anything like for the tourists who's here and maybe brings their kid, maybe they're going to a trade show, but they bring their family to it? Is there things that are like where they can learn a little bit about Atlanta as part of the permanent exhibit?
Well, no, it's really more about general learning.
It's general play.
It's general play. It's about farm to table. It's about mm-hmm. arts. It's about STEM. It's about fishing. It's about a lot of things.
And it's very hands-on, right?
Totally hands-on. And that's how we distinguish ourselves from other museums. If you go to most museums, the word museum is you.
It means don't touch.
Don't touch
it
anything.
It means don't touch.
And lots of those
and little roped
ropes.
Off areas. Right. We joke. We go. We invite people to come in and destroy property. So, come in, move things around, jump on it, throw it around. It's really what captures the imagination of children.
Now, is there any studies or anything that explains how kids benefit in their learning from playing?
Well, I forgot to bring my wheelbarrow of research, but yes, there is a lot. The more I've been working there since June of 2004, and there is an enormous amount of research on the true and more serious value of play in terms of brain development, development not only socially, but cognitive development. It is, in fact, really urgently important. And as our schools are losing funding for things like arts, for sports, for recess even, that is actually, it's not a nice to have. It is
a
must
have. Right.
You don't have that. You don't have kids that are, like, just think about it. Say you're learning about magnets. We'll just take something simple. You can read about it. You can fill in the bubbles going, this is what magnets do. But then you go someplace and you're presented with a table full of magnets and you start building things with magnets. I'm sorry, you're going to get magnets a whole lot more and you're going to start thinking about what could we do with this? And that's where the creativity and the ability to invent and innovate happens. It's knowledge plus hands-on experience that is irreplaceable. So if you start losing that, you're really losing a lot for the future.
Now, is there anything for special needs or autistic kids there?
Yes. In fact, we are accessible. We really focus on being a place that welcomes all children. So mm-hmm. that means children with all abilities. And we are actually starting a program this year that it's interesting that you mention autism, but we're working with a group of physicians and other people in the community to develop programming and opportunities for families who have children on the autism spectrum. Their needs are different, and we are looking to address those needs. So we're fully accessible and a welcoming place for everyone.
And there's a lot of centers here in town that are working on that issue.
Yes, it is you just have to look at any newspaper or whatnot, and you'll just be reading about this as a growing concern in the country.
So how about funding? Do you have corporate sponsors? Ticket sales cover enough, or how does that work?
We are a nonprofit organization.
Not on purpose. We're so working on that.
We do earn. We earn 60% of our operating revenue. And through ticket sales, memberships, birthday parties, camps, you know, I'll sell you my watch, anything. And then we do get support. Atlanta is a very generous community full of foundations, corporate sponsorships, and individuals. We have two events a year, which helps us also. So that's how we operate.
Now, what's the most rewarding part of your job?
That's a tough question, but I would say because children are everyone. There's no one who isn't concerned about children. I don't care who you are or where you come from. So we really look to the community a lot to help us think through what should our programming be, what exhibits should we bring, when we do bring an exhibit, what should we be highlighting. And so we invite the community to come and work with us. And that
to help shape the program?
To help shape the program. Nice. To help inform us. So for example, we had an exhibit called Exploring Trees Inside and Out. So we're a great staff. We're pretty small staff. We're not expert at everything. So we look out in the community and we pull together a committee that is made up of folks from Trees Atlanta, the Georgia Forestry Service, et cetera, et cetera. And all those people come into our boardroom and help us learn all that we need to know to really say, what do we need to be focusing on here for our visitors? And what happens is we meet a lot of people. And it makes our programming really valid, exciting, interesting, true, and we've gotten a lot of people invested in what we're doing.
Now, before June of 2004, you had a real job, it sounded like, right?
See, I
really do listen when we have these conversations.
Well, I forgot to tell you, I was born in June of 2003.
So how did you get into this world of power of a play? What did you do before?
Well, actually, it's, you know, no path. I'm going to look around the table. Probably no path is a straight one. But actually, I moved here from Washington, D.C. in 1992, and I had been working for 15 years with a company that was headquartered here called National Data Corporation. And I was living in the world of technology, healthcare technology. And when we moved here, I just decided, you know, I'm going to kind of change gears here. And I got involved with Georgia Shakespeare Festival, which is a wonderful theater on the campus of Oglethorpe University. Mm-hmm. And ended up president of their board and got very invested in the arts as a powerful way to connect with a community and with people. The nonprofit world in Atlanta, and somehow it led to the Children's Museum. And so you go through life and you go, I'm going to take a little bit of what's good with me. And so thus we have a troupe of professional actors, but it is a powerful tool. And this place has enabled me to really experience a lot of different topics, a lot of different people, and feel like we're having an impact.
And there must be a really strong collaboration with area schools. You work with them a lot. Because summer, you got parents and all that kind of thing. But during the school year, you're coordinating all kinds of things.
Do they do field trips and things?
Yes, we see probably between 18,000 and 20,000 field trippers each year.
Whoa.
Yeah, not all in the same day. They're spread out. But, we work. And the programs that we develop for field trip programs are really tied to the performance standards that are required for schools. So kids are learning something really important in an environment that really helps extend the learning beyond their classroom. And I think that's what teachers appreciate.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more or maybe, kind of experience the Weebles firsthand, what's the website?
Well, our website is childrensmuseumatlanta.org. Our phone number is 404-659-KIDS. And we're open during the week, weekdays and from 10 till 4, and on the weekends from 10 until 5 p.m.
Now, you got the Weebles right now, June through September, mm-hmm. right? And then after that, what do you got?
We've got an exhibit coming. This will appeal probably to anyone, called mm-hmm. Moneyville. And it is really a really cool exhibit about how money is in a society and how it is a form of bartering, and that back in the day, things like chocolate served as money, which I don't know that I'd ever have a savings account.
No, it works that way in my house. I've seen my kids trade chocolate for money. Yeah.
But it is really a look at money as an important and integral part of any society, even primitive societies. So it's really interesting in how money's made, and you can set up a little pretend business as a lemonade stand, and so it's really cool. And I think so. I'm not sure, but I think there might be a way to look at actual $1 million, which
wow.
I can't wait to see that. So,
all right. So if people wanted to learn more about what's happened there, it's childrensmuseumatlanta.org.
That's right.
All right. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
And thanks to all our guests. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Atlanta Business Radio.